You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Lean back. Mark Rohde with you. Until the mid of night, when the grobber walks in. Love to hear from you. 312-644-6767, 670-11. I just walked out. I don't know where grobber is now, but his stuff is here. A couple of jugs of 5-hour energy, and he is ready to go, man. He's got the five hour. Adam, did that excite you? I just saw you get all excited over there.
Just the jugs. I mean, because I think it actually is jugs of 5-hour energy is what he has.
He wishes he had those.
Yeah.
I used to do an endorsement for 5-hour energy, so I had back in the day, I had a locker full of it, like boxes of it, and grobber. That's when I had to buy a lock for the locker. I would give him it was like an allowance. I'd be like, here is your 5-hour energy. And I had like boxes of it. So I did end up, once I felt he was cool and he wouldn't OD on the stuff, I gave him a box of 5-hour energy. So I think it's since that, I think it's because of me that grobber to this day is addicted to 5-hour
energy. You fed the addiction. Come on, man.
Hey man, if there's ever a shift in life that deserves 5-hour energy, it is the midnight to 5 shift here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. To that end, by the way, while we're at it, congratulations to Lawrence Holmes. I was just a little bit taken off guard, and then just so happy for Lawrence. Somebody texted me today while I was working out and said, hey, what are your thoughts on the lineup change at The Score? And I was like, what is this, somebody wanting a summary of what I think of what has happened? Because I had no idea. Like, one of those moments where you're just oblivious about something. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then he said, Lawrence Holmes, 12-2, taking an hour off of the other shows, which doesn't harm those shows. It probably makes life easier for the other shows. And if you don't know, so Mully and Haw, 5-9. It will then be Connor and Bernstein from 9 to noon. Lawrence Holmes will have his own show, noon to 2 here on The Score, and then McNeil and Parkins, 2 to 6. So I was so happy for Lawrence, because we're all competitive around here. We all want these jobs. We all want to be hosts. We all want the day parts. But I couldn't have been more happy for Lawrence. And I believe it starts when? Next Monday, fellas?
Next Thursday.
Okay. So
the
next
28th.
And Joe Ostrowski, by the way, Joe O will be taking over evenings now when there's not a Cubs game or a Bulls game or, well, I don't think we have to worry about Illini games anymore, do we? That's all done. So Joe O, the new evening guy, he's still going to be doing updates on some days in the morning. So Joe O will have some interesting spectrums from not that Joe O knows where he is at any given moment or what day it is, because I know how it is. I work with the then Mully and Hanley show on mornings for 5 years. I know how that works. You never know what day it is. You never know what's going on. He's going to be so lost doing mornings and doing nights, crisscrossing on certain days. But congratulations to Lawrence Holmes, going to get the noon to 2 slot. He doesn't just deserve it because he's kind of put his time in the evenings. He is an extremely talented host. And talented people rise at the top, and that's what Lawrence is doing. So he will be on noon to 2. Congrats to Lawrence. All right. We want to talk a little bit about the Bears, and we're going to talk about Robert Kraft as well. Bears. Absolutely, Bears. So right away, let's talk about the one big change that has occurred for the Bears, and that is at the safety position this side of Eddie Jackson. And I said going in, I would really liked it if the Bears would have kept Adrian Amos. That was my first choice, even over Bryce Callen. I just thought it was really important to keep that continuity together between Adrian Amos and Eddie Jackson, because sometimes you don't know how much maybe Adrian Amos affected how well Eddie Jackson play last year, and Adrian Amos is an incredibly consistent player who kind of adds a little something extra to his game every year. I feel like Adrian Amos is going to be one of those guys that is in the league for a long time, just the way he plays, and he's a smart player as well. And he was third on the team in tackles last year, had a couple of really important pass breakups, did have a couple of picks, not really a ball hawk, Adrian Amos. But it was my choice, my hope, that the Bears would bring back Adrian Amos. However, not for the price that the Green Bay Packers offered him. I understand why the Bears took a pass on him, and I really, really like the signing of HaHa Clinton Dix. I don't think Clinton Dix is in any way a star, and I don't think he's certainly not lived up to what he was and where he was drafted and how he played in college. But this is a man who is properly motivated right now. It's sort of an unceremonious letting go in Green Bay. I was completely taken off guard by that last year when HaHa Clinton Dix was traded by the Green Bay Packers. It didn't make sense to me. I thought he was better than that, and I thought that, you know, considering the importance of the secondary, that they should have probably kept HaHa Clinton Dix. But here's a guy who, because of that, and, you know, just reading, I have not talked to Clinton Dix yet, but just reading what he has said, you could tell he's kind of miffed as to why the Packers let him go like that. So you have a guy who is not only motivated because of that, getting an ego check, a little bit of humility, also because he becomes a free agent after this year. So it is a perfect guy for the Bears to sign to what is a one-year affordable deal. If you can't bring back Adrian Amos, you weren't going to pay any of the other guys that were ahead of Adrian Amos on that free agent list. And we know that there was a couple of guys. I just think that Dix is going to be extremely, extremely motivated this year. He is a ball hawk. He is a guy who can get forced turnovers probably at a higher rate than Adrian Amos. And he's a guy who's going to want his money after this year. And quite frankly, because the window is open for the Bears and you never know how long windows are going to stay open, I don't care if he uses the Bears this year to get his stock up and then he goes somewhere else, as long as he contributes heavily to what the Bears are doing this year. And I think it's very possible, because of the proper motivation that he has, that he is going to do that. Now, the other one that I'm still hoping for, but I don't know if it's going to be possible, is the bringing back of Bryce Callahan, just because of how good he was, the importance of that position. And they bring in Buster Skrine, who is a okay player, but he's not as good, in my opinion, as Bryce Callahan. Callahan is small, and it has led to him being injured a lot. But again, hey, man, if you get 14 games out of him and hopefully available for the playoffs, Bryce Callahan would be a great guy to bring back. It would not appear that will be the case. But
Mark?
Yes.
Mike Kliss from Denver is saying that he already received a contract this afternoon.
Oh!
Signing bonus, $4 million. Earn another $3 million in 2019, and if he makes it to the 53-man roster.
So that's it for Bryce. Bryce.
It doesn't seem like a prohibitive contract.
Okay. What was the terms again?
$4 million sign-in bonus, $3 million if he makes the 53-man. So it's about $7 million per season. Cap hit this year is $4 million. Next year it's $8 million. The year after that it's $8
million. All right. Well, yeah, so and like I said, Buster Skrine, a guy who is a decent player. He was okay with the Jets, can play the position, but I would have really liked to have seen Bryce Callahan back. I thought maybe with some of the money that the Bears were moving around and restructuring of contracts, including Khalil Mack and Kyle Long, that possibly that could go towards that, but that's not going to happen. Another thing I was thinking today, as it pertains to the Bears, is this the most anticipated Bears season since the 1980s? And I always say that because it seems more sustainable than any of the Bears' division-winning or playoff teams that have existed since the 1980s. And I kind of put my list together of most anticipated Bears seasons. And I will go to 1985. The Bears were coming off a strong season in 1984, which included a road win in Washington in the playoffs and then a very distasteful loss at San Francisco. Sound a little bit familiar? The Bears kind of came out of nowhere this year and then had a very distasteful loss in the playoffs. Another year, 1986. That goes without saying. Extremely anticipated because of the 85 Bears. People wanted to see what the follow-up would be. It was 14-2, and then the Bears were extremely disappointing in the playoffs in 1986. Some people say that defense in 86 was better than 85. That's crap. That was not the case. 1994, or make that 95, perhaps a little bit of anticipation because that was the Dave Wanstead Bears won a wild card game in Minnesota the year before, 1994. One of my favorite Bears playoff wins, just because it was really shocking, very surprising. The Bears went into the old Metrodome in Minnesota and actually won that game.
Wasn't that the year where like all four NFC North teams made it? Well, except for the Tampa Bay NFC Central teams made it, when it was like the Packers versus the Lions, Bears versus the Vikings in the first round in the wild card?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. And that year was such a pleasant surprise because they were not supposed to win that game in Minnesota. But the Bears after that, guys, would not see the playoffs after 1994 until 2001, when they were, of course, beaten up and killed almost literally by Hugh Douglas. So I love that season. That is one of my favorite Bears seasons, 2001, because that was the Mike Brown magic year, the back-to-back San Fran and Cleveland walk-off wins.
That's the year that made me a Bears fan.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was. That was, I was kind of fumbling for an identity for an NFL team, and I saw them play that year, and I was like, yeah, this is it. This is where I want to be. And I hopped on board, and I've unfortunately, that was short-lived, that experience of the, oh, they're good, and then the next year they're terrible.
Oh, I mean, that team, the Mike Brown, you had a young Urlacher, was it first year or second?
That was his second year.
Second year.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the Mike Brown games.
Yeah.
The Keith Traylor interception.
Ted Washington.
One of the greatest highlights of my lifetime.
Yeah, that was hilarious and excellent. You had, remember the linebackers? You had Warwick Holdman, Roosevelt Colvin, and Brian Urlacher. And then Roosevelt Colvin eventually got a big free agent deal with the New England Patriots, back when the Patriots would do such things. And never really went on to be as good of a player as I thought he was going to be, and they broke that hold up. And I think Warwick Holdman, I'd have to go back and look. He's where are they now material for sure. But yeah, 2001 was a great season for the Bears, but there was no momentum into 2002, and there was some magic. I mean, when you look at that team, not the Keith Traylor thing necessarily, but man, let's face it, it's pretty lucky when you get back-to-back walk-off wins like they did with Mike Brown doing what he did.
And they had to complete a Hail Mary after an onside kick, I think, against the Browns to get that game to overtime.
Oh, James Allen. Yeah.
James Allen, there's another, like, who where is he now, guy?
Oh, yeah, James.
And then, you know, the ball just falls into Mike Brown's hands after getting tipped at the line.
Right, and it was just like he just runs into the tunnel and says, let's get the hell out of here because we just got away with something. And there was another stupid year, too, where people were it was a fun defense to watch. There's no doubt about it, but there were the 85 Bears comparisons, which was really, really dumb. There was no momentum into 2002. It didn't occur. I think people were anticipating, hoping, but you had to know in the back of your head that there was a lot of magic that occurred in 2001 to get to the Bears to where they were that year. That brings us to the 2006 season. Yes, there was anticipation for that season, for obvious reasons, because the Bears had been coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, a Super Bowl which they'd lost to the Indianapolis Colts. So that goes without saying. 2011, yeah, there was a little bit coming off the NFC title loss to Green Bay. Although I think that what keeps that away from being a heavily anticipated season was the fact that the Bears did lose to Green Bay in the NFC title game. And I think that that caused some pain in the offseason, more so than usual, and maybe took a little bit out of the anticipation going into the next year. So that said, this year feels like nothing that I have felt since the 80s Bears. And you saw the pattern there. When the Bears make the playoffs in the 2000s, they don't repeat the next year in terms of being good. They're good one year, and then they suck the next. The 80s, the magic of that was there was legitimate sustained success that every year in the 80s, the Bears from 84 on, and I didn't even mention 90, 91, these were playoff teams. These were, you know, it was a great time. It was the glory years of the Chicago Bears. There's no doubt about it. And they had just been skipping around since then. So this would be the first year in a long time where the Bears would be going to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. And like I said, there is legitimacy. And obviously it all starts with Khalil Mack and that Bears defense, which I think we didn't see a lot of fluky stuff. I mean, there were moments where you could say, with Eddie Jackson getting two pick sixes, but a lot of that, I think, in his case, was being in the right place, not necessarily just being lucky and the ball floating into his hands. So, I do feel like this is, since the 1985 Bears season, the most anticipated Bears season that has existed. When we return, let's continue to talk about football. And I'm going to read you some stuff about Robert Kraft and some new developments in his ordeal, of course, talking about the owner of the New England Patriots. That is coming up next. I'm Mark Grody, and this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. All right, Mark Grody with you, 11:23 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score on a Wednesday night, 312-644-6767. Textable at 670-11. The Bulls win in overtime today. The White Sox and Eloy Jimenez closing in on a potential contract extension worth a guaranteed $43 million. Bryce Callahan apparently ready to sign with the Denver Broncos, so that would preclude him from coming back to the Chicago Bears. And I do believe that this is the most anticipated Bears season since 1985, coming off the momentum of 84. And actually, very similar types of seasons. I think that there was probably more expectation back in 1984 for the Bears just because of some of the up-and-comers that they had and some of the rising stars. But once Khalil Mack came to the Bears in last offseason, that changed everything, and that came to legitimacy for sure. All right, there is have been new developments in the last 48 hours on our good friend Robert Kraft. Attorneys for, and indulge me here if you will, attorneys for the New England Patriots owner, Robert Kraft, this is from ESPN, filed a motion today to suppress evidence, notably the video evidence, in his solicitation of prostitution case. This is according to one of the sources cited by ESPN. The motion is an effort to make sure that the surveillance video, described as graphic and damning, isn't released if he doesn't reach a plea agreement or plea deal with prosecutors. It is also a warning shot to prosecutors that Kraft's legal team will try to go after the state's case by saying that there was no probable cause to collect the evidence in the first place. The Palm Beach County State Attorney's Office offered Kraft and 24 other men, I love this, a diversion deal on Monday night. That diversion deal would have, or would, I suppose, allow the men to avoid prosecution if they meet certain conditions. A diversion deal would expunge their cases and it would seal all evidence. Under the initial deal that was offered, prosecutors would drop misdemeanor solicitation charges if the men, including Robert Kraft, pay $5,000 fines for each offense. Kraft was charged with two, by the way. also complete an educational course about prostitution, submit to testing for sexually transmitted diseases, and admit in court that they would have been found guilty had the case gone to trial. It's that last point that could derail the deal. A source close to Kraft, again, this is a source cited by ESPN, said, quote, "That's not going to happen," and said the 77-year-old would rather fight the charges in court than admit to a crime. Sources said that the two sides were continuing to negotiate and that Kraft had not rejected the deal outright. If Kraft accepts a diversion program offer, it means that, in a legal sense, the incident never happened. But he would also essentially be admitting to the facts of the case, that he allegedly received sexual services at the Orchids of Asia Day Spa in Jupiter, Florida. That was on January 29th and 19th and 20. Kraft has never specifically denied receiving sexual services at the spa, but through a spokesperson denied having committed a crime. So, last thing here, Kraft is said to be especially concerned about having his name connected to accusations of sex trafficking. When law enforcement officials first announced the arrests of spa operators last month, they described it as a sex trafficking case. Who wants to be associated with that? But documents show that the two women Kraft is accused of receiving services from likely were not trafficked. One is 39 and was charged with operating illegal activity at the spa. The other is 58. Both have valid driver's licenses. Both are licensed as massage therapists by the state of Florida. So far, no one in the case has been charged with human trafficking, which is really good news because that was the part of it that, that we weren't all giggling about. It's really interesting here. I got to be honest with you. I can't blame Bob Kraft for not wanting to concede with the little getaway plan that that prosecutors put forward on this, because it is essentially prosecutors saying, come on, just admit what you did and everything will be cool. But the last thing that Robert Kraft wants to do at this point is just totally and completely admit what he has done. He does not want to deal with that embarrassment, not if he doesn't have to. And prosecutors know, and I think the public knows, that if he was to accept that, that's all the punishment he would need. Because if he admits to doing all that, that is hyper embarrassing for him. And the NFL would then have to lay down some sort of suspension. And he would basically, if he admitted to doing all that and then doing all those silly things that they want him to do, including community service, then he would be humiliated. He would look ridiculous. And there would be no holes to poke in the story.
So you're saying he doesn't want a handout?
Well, that is correct.
Well,
that is correct.
$500 is a little too much for it then.
He does not want a handout. No.
Sorry.
No. You've been waiting to give that line, haven't you, Herbie?
Yeah.
You quit your giggling over there, Studzinski. I don't know.
That was so good.
I kind of saw a smirk on Herb's face. Like, he's like, I got something. Yeah. Come on.
He knew he was building it up.
Get it to me immediately.
I got the right moment.
I got a little something for you.
Top rope.
Got a little I mean, if you were Bob Kraft, though, really, Robert, would you take the deal that the prosecutors get? Because he's got all the resources in the world to fight this thing. He's got all the money in the world to do some sort of underhanded plea deal agreement without just being like, yeah, I did it. I shouldn't have done it. And now I'm going to go do community service and I'm going to make good and everything's going to be A-OK.
I mean, it's only a misdemeanor, so I don't know he's fighting it so hard. It is a weird thing because they say they have him on tape. So what? I don't know how you're going to beat the case. It's a really weird stance for him to take.
Yeah, I was surprised.
He's 72, right?
77, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, I understand. I mean, I think most understand. Fine, it's not something that I would do, but yeah, I got it, my guy. Good.
Right. Like,
it's fine.
The sex trafficking is the part that and everybody should have been mad about if that had been the case. But what he did, most guys are like, okay, all right, you felt like you had to do what you had to do to become happy on multiple occasions. And, you know, at this point, the problem is, though, from his perspective, there's a lot to be reckoned with when it comes to legacy and moving forward, his power position that exists in the NFL, and just the fact that there will be a smudge on his record if he is just to give up and not fight and come up with some other sort of circumstantial evidence, or at least give the appearance of fighting in this. And I doubt Robert Kraft has anything, but he's got really powerful lawyers who are trying to come up with some sort of case with this. So, yeah. I think it was a good idea by a prosecutor. I think that they should do this more often with things like this, like with things like misdemeanors in general, or things that we look at and say, come on, get, you know, do we really have to make a big deal out of something like this? But in the case of Bob Kraft, there is a lot to be reckoned with in terms of his position.
I think it was one of those things where prosecutors are like, let's see if we can get him to do this. I don't think that they thought it was going to work. And it's just like, let's see if we can get him on this. Let's throw this at
him. Well, yeah.
And it's like you're not going to have to plead guilty, but you're going to say you did it, which is in the court of public opinion is guilty, you know?
It seems like, right. And all that anybody cares about, I think, if you are a normal, rational person, is that, you know, hey, you got caught. And, you know, you're going to have to suffer a little bit of embarrassment. There may be a few jokes made on your behalf, but he's running and sprinting from that and trying to come up with a way to totally and completely elude any of that embarrassment. And, yeah, prosecutor's like, you know, just say you did it. Everything will be cool. We're not worried about it. But it's simply not going to be the case. 312-644-6767 is the number. If you want to weigh in on Bob Kraft or anything else that we have talked about, I'm Mark Grody. I'm here until midnight tonight. The Grobber is here. I'll talk to him at midnight as well. We are textable at 670-11 as well. While I've got you guys, I wanted to circle back around to the White Sox and the fact that Eloy Jimenez is on the verge of reportedly getting an extension, 6 years, $43 million guaranteed. Some of the other details on this, by the way, could receive a maximum of $77.5 million over 8 years with a couple of club options. And if he happens to win the MVP, he would get $2.5 million worth. Did this come as a surprise to you guys? You guys surprised this news came down, or do you think this is something the White Sox had to do and you saw coming?
It came as a surprise because it's the right move to make, and the White Sox have been this whole offseason making the wrong moves, saying the wrong things. So, yeah, it's a perfect thing for the club, perfect thing for Eloy. If they think the guy he's going to be is going to be a superstar, buying up all of his arbitration years and two of his free agent years for what comes out to be like $9 million of annual value, solid, works out for everybody. And then us White Sox fans get a little, it's kind of like a gift, like, hey, we see you guys, it's been a tough off season here's Eloy, opening day, no games,
right?
No lies,
no screwing around. Like, if he's not in that opening day lineup in Kansas City next Thursday, then there is a real problem, because I couldn't care less about how poorly he played during this spring in terms of hitting, because we know what he's capable of doing. Studs, what'd you think?
I agree with Herb. Like, I'm glad they did it. I don't know if I was necessarily surprised, just because we saw the report last week that said the Sox were working on a deal. I would have been shocked if it was that $100 million one. That would have been like, whoa, okay, that's a lot for a guy that has yet to have a major league at bat. But I'm really glad they did it, and I think it's even better for that. We should ideally see him opening day now. Like, I'm already thinking about going to the home opener, which I would not have done otherwise. So, I mean, that right there, they sold another ticket. So, good for them. So, yeah, I'm stoked about it. Like, I'm looking forward to the season getting started now, more so than I was when I still had this bitter taste in my mouth about Manny Machado and and everything else that is going on this offseason.
Yeah, and this hour on the Score is being brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors. Transform your home with the beauty and craftsmanship of Marvin Windows and Doors. I don't think the White Sox are going to be in the playoff picture this year, but when you're in that division, it can't be laughed off. The AL Central last year, Cleveland was tops and probably will be again this year. 91-71. Check out the rest of the division last year. The Twins were 78-84. Detroit 64-98. And then your 100 loss teams. The White Sox last year 62-100. The Royals 58-100. I guess I'd make them 102. I had written down 100, but the math would not make sense right there. So you had there. In other words, there are wins to be had in that division, and there is room for a dark horse candidate like the White Sox.
That's why another reason why I'm excited to see Eloy up right away, because I mean, I don't expect them to make the playoffs this year. I ideally would like to see them playing good baseball by, you know, the second half of the season. They're starting to get better. You're starting to see something from them. But again, because the division is so bad, you never know. 85 wins could win the division. You know, it might. I don't think it will, but
yeah,
it
Cleveland
might.
Is not as interested in winning as they once were either. You know what I mean? Like, well, yeah, I still think they're the best team.
That's the thing, is what team in this division is out to win it right now?
Right.
No one is.
Yeah,
Cleveland's selling assets. The Sox are still rebuilding. I mean, it's no one's set to win anything other than a division title.
It was reported the other day that Cleveland's still shopping their two top pitchers, Trevor Bauer and
Kluber,
to the San Diego Padres, maybe. And the Padres just balked at the price. But they're like, we could still win this division even if we sell our top two pitchers. We're good. We just need to retool on the fly. These guys can't catch us. So maybe they sell those two top guys off, injury to anybody on that top infield, anybody in that outfield gets hurt, and the White Sox are right back in there. The yeah. Twins are right back in there.
I mean, and Detroit's Fulmer, he's hurt at this point. I have no idea what's going on with the Twins. Are the Twins doing anything in this offseason?
They're supposed to be good.
Yeah.
Rocco Baldelli.
That's right. A.O. Rocco. He's their new manager. Paul Molitor are gone. What a strange managerial career he had with the Twins. But yeah, the Twins 78-84 last year. Yeah, there's room at the inn for the White Sox to be that guy. Obviously, you know, there is that, like I said, talking to Scott Merkin earlier, I have not seen this expectation of a star around here since Chris Bryant. And obviously, Bryant, it worked out under the shine of the Cubs and the expectations that exist. I haven't heard one person who hasn't said that not only is Eloy Jimenez going to be a major league player, but he's going to be a great major league player, and he's going to be a great major league player fast.
And with the Twins, to get back to them, they got Nelson Cruz, their new DH. They went and got Marwin Gonzalez.
Okay, good player.
I think also Michael Pineda is their new starting pitcher. So, All right. They get improved. They were 78 wins, so that looks like an 85-win team.
Yeah, yeah. The improvement for the White Sox, I mean, beyond Eloy Jimenez and some of the proven commodities that you think you might have with the White Sox, I think it comes down to two guys for me in terms of are they going to show some shine, and that's Yoan Moncada. Who, I mean, you got to give him a pass with it having been his first full year, but there were some bad moments for Moncada last year. But he's got to show. I mean, same with Lucas Giolito. I mean, it was kind of a, even though you don't want to put too much pressure or too much expectation on two guys who you think are supposed to be huge parts of your rebuild and your core. There were some alarming moments last year for Giolito and the high earned run average, and then just all the strikeouts from Moncada, and most of them standing there looking, which I think is easier to fix than swing and miss strikeout. So a better command of what the strike zone is, and pitches that at this age that a guy can't take. And then Moncada just being a better, you know, all-around switch hitter. So those are incredibly important. I mean, if they come to pass, if they come to be what they're, some semblance of what they're supposed to be, I think that there's a good place for the White Sox in that division that just may be there for the take. If not this year, then next year for sure. Let's take a quick break, our final break. We got Grobber coming up at midnight. I'm here until midnight. We are callable and textable. 312-644-6767 is the number. 670-11 is the text line. More coming up here on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score. What's up? 11:46 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm Mark Grody. Here until midnight. 708. Where's Les? WTF. Les is on at midnight. Like he always is. 219. Not even listening anymore, but wanted to say, I just got in the house, sat on the couch, and The Fugitive is on. The Fugitive is always on. It's the beautiful part about The Fugitive, that generally speaking, you can go in your house, you can flip around the channels, and you can find Dr. Richard Kimball.
I think the same is true with Shawshank Redemption. I swear that movie is on all the time.
Very smart programming, really.
It is. I mean, well, yeah, that movie's on. I'm going to, all right, yeah, I'll watch this again.
I mean, it's a competitive field out there, and those are moneymakers. You know what I mean? You could still put those movies on terrestrial TV constantly, and people are going to stop and watch them. You know what I mean?
That's the reason it's called Getting Shawshanked. I can't stop.
Exactly. Andy Dufresne and the boys. Andy Dufresne, Richard Kimball, all those guys are great guys. Great guys, and they make you feel there is a comfort about watching those shows. And no matter what has happened in your day, no matter how scary things are, they will make you feel cozy and comfortable and that everything's going to be all right. Because in the end, everything is all right for Dr. Richard Kimball and for Andy Dufresne.
He finds the one-armed man.
What about that one-armed guy? Has he got one of these? He finds the one-armed guy. And Andy Dufresne is on that one island. This is a good time, by the way, too, for my annual address to people who love the NCAA tournament. I do like the NCAA tournament. Who doesn't like the NCAA tournament? It's very cool. I'm not a huge college basketball fan to begin with, so I'm not going to lie and say that I love every second of it. But as it gets better and better and deeper, there's always cool storylines that go on. And you know, Loyola was a hell of a story last year. And there's always those teams. And there's guys that you learn about, their stars. And this year it's obviously dominated by Duke and Zion Williamson because of how terrific of a prospect he is. Here's the thing that drives me crazy about the NCAA tournament, and I feel the need to address it every year at this time. For some reason, with the NCAA tournament, unlike any other major sporting event that exists. And when I say that, you know, the Super Bowl, the World Series, the Stanley Cup playoffs, pick your sport, pick your big moments. For some reason, people insist during the NCAA tournament, it's the only major event where people insist on telling you how great it is. That it's the NCAA tournament. This is my favorite sporting event. This is the greatest thing ever, and I can't wait to watch the NCAA tournament, and darn it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to watch the NCAA tournament, and I got my brackets, and I'm going to bet, and I'm going to watch, and I'm taking work off, and it's just the greatest thing ever. And that's fine. I just don't understand why this is the only major sporting event that exists that people have to convince you that it is the greatest thing of all time. And even, you know, people are thinking right now, the Super Bowl, what about the Super Bowl? No, people don't do that with the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl hype is real, and it's overdone probably, and it's every single day. But with the Super Bowl, it speaks for itself. Like, it is great. The NCAA tournament is great. Just let it be great instead of telling me how great it is. Do you guys have any idea why that is? And maybe you guys are guilty. I don't know. I don't know where you guys stand on the NCAA tournament. But why is it with the NCAA tournament? It's the only major sporting event in this country that people insist upon the NCAA tournament.
I really don't know. I mean, maybe it's just because it starts in, you know, the middle of the week, essentially, and it's nonstop basketball, like, you know, from like 11 in the morning till 10 at night. It's just nonstop action, and there's all these crazy upsets. I don't know why people have to be so outspoken about it, though. Like, the anticipation. Like, I do agree there. Like, I watch it every year.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I get into it, but I'm not one of these people that's like, oh, man, I can't wait for it. It's like, I do think that the first 2 days of the tournament are some of the best 2 days in sports of the year, just because there's always something on, and there's always great action, and you get these crazy upsets, and, you know, maybe we get another 16 beaten away. Like, I love, like, looking for that stuff, but I'm not one of these people that's like Eli Hershkovitz, who does great work, who's just like, oh, man, give me this action. Like, let's go.
And I'm not a fan of people getting exploited for millions and billions of dollars for other people, like corporations and coaches and universities and the NCAA themselves. So I like it, but also I take a step back and say the billions that are generated here are not going to the people who are giving me this free entertainment. So I got to look back and it's like, this is not as good as it should be. If these kids were getting paid, nice. I'll be into it. But yeah, Eli's crazy with it. He didn't watch the NBA. I was like, Eli, what do you think the best players here go? Like, the best players go to somewhere else and play better.
There's this whole other level where these guys that are all really good are there, and you can watch just them. Like, it's this weird thing that happens.
The best of the best. God bless Eli, because he's great at breaking it down. Is he one of those people, though, that I'm talking about that's trying to tell everybody that there's nothing better in the world than the NCAA tournament?
I haven't heard. Yeah, I haven't.
Is he guilty?
I can speculate to that.
Oh, I love Eli.
He's still up right now tweeting about how great it's going to be. I asked him which one is his favorite. He said every one of these days, like the selection day is great, the Thursday, Friday is great, the Final Four is great. This is his Christmas right now.
Yeah, and it is for a lot of people. And again, I don't begrudge you that. Like, if you love college basketball and you love the NCAA tournament, that's fine. But like, this, like, it's like this obsessive, like, I've got to, like, it, like, it's, people feel like it's their duty, like it's a religious thing. I have to, like, it's my responsibility to spread the word of the NCAA tournament and convince everybody that it is the greatest sporting event that exists. And yeah, single elimination is pretty cool. But let me tell you, there's some things that in sports that are more exciting, like any game seven that's ever existed in professional sports. You know, the baseball one-and-done games, those to me are more exciting. Oh, the Super Bowl. Oh, any single NFL game. And quite frankly, any Bears game is more exciting than the NCAA tournament to me. Bears. I'm not going to lie to you.
And you're right about that.
Yeah, yeah. I think those are more exciting. So, again, the annual address, which I feel like I get a little better at every year. The annual address is this. Enjoy the NCAA tournament like we enjoy all great sporting events. Just stop trying to convince the world, maybe yourself, that it's the greatest thing in the world. Just enjoy it. Let it be. Let it be natural. Bears. I want to thank everybody for listening and texting tonight. I'm Mark Grody. Les Grobstein is coming up next. Thanks to Herb Lawrence and Adam Studzinski for running the show and chiming in like they do. Thanks to Scott Merkin from MLB.com, covering the White Sox, talking about Eloy Jimenez. Have a great rest of your night and next day. Les Grobstein is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.